Okay, I'm recording.
Excellent. Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
And I am Richard.
And we are trying once again to record in our respective houses.
Mm-hmm. We'll see how it goes.
Fully expect a disaster. So I was kind of hobbling down. Oh, I should also say we discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest.
Absolutely.
Movies, TV, DVDs, video games, and then a little bit of tech, just because there's not quite enough tech podcasts out there. We need to offer our own brand. Anyway. I just thought of something. Let me write that down. Okay. So it's been a while since we've recorded, and I was actually coming down with more things than I thought on the list, but they're all very, very random.
Yep.
First of all, have you seen any new movies in the theater lately?
I saw Shoot 'Em Up.
Bring it on.
I went to go see it last. First of all, I was like excited because I saw it on Thursday afternoon at the Everett Mall, and I was thinking, wow. Oh my God, this is. I just happened to be there, and
why is that exciting?
Well, because I was thinking, oh my God, this is finally the day that I will see a movie in a theater completely alone. And sure enough, 2 minutes before it goes on, this woman wheels in this giant wheelchair contraption, and I'm the only person in the theater, and I was in that front row of the stadium seating,
uh-huh.
And you can't block somebody's view in there. And sure enough, her wheelchair had her so high up that she actually blocked, like, the bottom tenth of the screen for me. It's like I'm the only one in the theater. But anyway, so I saw Shoot 'Em Up, and it was awesome. Loved it.
Cool. That was that actually was at San Diego Comic-Con, but I didn't find out about it till afterwards. And apparently, unlike the Stardust screening that I was blocked out of because they were full, this one, which filled up, they convinced the theater to show it again afterwards. Yeah. So they literally showed it.
Cool.
You know, at midnight.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's a short movie. I mean, when I was out, I realized it couldn't be more than 90 minutes at the very longest. And it was cool because the director clearly has my musical sensibility because he timed a lot of the, first of all, it's interesting that finally Nirvana is selling their music. I guess they need money. Selling their music to a lot of outfits. There was like some TV show that featured a bunch of them. And this one started out, the first action sequence was, I think it was In Bloom by Nirvana. But they did a whole bunch of sequences to great songs. And it was like, oh my God, songs I'm into. It's like, one was AC/DC's If You Want Blood, You've Got It, and In Bloom, and Motorhead's The Ace of Spades. It was like, wow, this is really cool. It's not, oh, let's pick some new band that nobody's ever heard of and use this as an opportunity to sell their song. It was like clearly the director picked a song he liked. And very exciting, very dumb, but in a smart way. And God, great movie. Really
That's
fun.
Cool. I think
Clive Owen's awesome.
I was going to say, I think what happened was that Courtney Love won some aspect of a court case, and that's part of why Nirvana music is now more available to license than it was.
Yeah. Well, it worked great. It was like, wow, this is a rockin' song, and you can see this is going to play really well, and it does, and yeah, cool.
That's cool. I have really been dying to see 310 to Yuma, but just have been completely unable to.
Yeah, I've been busy too.
My work flexed out, and it's like I'm going to be working 50-hour weeks at least through the end of October, and it's just.
Well, I almost saw it, but it was like I was standing there at the theater, like I pulled in, and I thought, oh, there's movies, and I looked up, and whichever one was starting in the next 20 minutes, and that proved to be Shoot 'Em Up.
That'll do it. So I haven't seen anything new. I've been lagging horribly. But so just as I randomly go down my list, this is very shocking to me, but the Owen Wilson thing, where Owen Wilson apparently tried to commit suicide.
Yeah, that's pretty sad.
And it is, because he just seems so, I mean, he's essentially been playing the same character forever.
Yeah.
You know, just this laid-back, happy-go-lucky goofball. And of course, you know, you often, as an audience member, just assume that an actor is like their character. And especially when they keep playing the same type of character like Owen does, you just assume that's how he is in real life. And it's so hard to believe that somebody that goofy and funny would, you know, would have trouble.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting is reading some of the what do you call it, the tabloids and stuff. They're implying that he really started palling around with, of all people, Steve Coogan, who was the guy in 24-Hour Party People and the guy in, he was in Night at the Museum with him and stuff. And apparently Steve Coogan's like a major drug head, and Jennifer Aniston, was it Jennifer, who was it that was going
Kate,
out the
whole Kate Hudson.
Kate Hudson, yeah. She like gave Owen Wilson an ultimatum because he was doing, like, they were claiming heroin and stuff. I mean, who knows? But it was but they were laying it all on the doorstep of this user, Steve Coogan. I'm thinking, Steve Coogan? Really? So, but they were kind of claiming there was a whole bunch of stuff going on. But clearly the guy's got demons. I feel, and it's really kind of bad. And it's funny how it took Hollywood all of 2 seconds to start talking about, well, what's going to happen, all these movies he was about to be in, and this Darjeeling Limited, and it's like, damn, I guess that's all that matters, is how it's going to affect movies and a career.
Yeah, so anyway, it's very sad, and hopefully he conquers whatever he needs to conquer, because he may just play one character, but he does a really good job at it.
It's funny how people don't, how a lot of, just generally, they assume he's kind of an idiot because he plays this kind of happy-go-lucky idiot. They don't realize he's, like, been nominated for an Oscar for writing, and he's written, like, almost all of those Wes Anderson movies with Wes Anderson.
Right.
They're just assuming he's not particularly smart, and it's like, no, he's a smart guy. Anyway.
So next on my list, the Iron Man trailer.
Oh, I love that trailer.
And you
changed
said,
my mind completely. And maybe the fact that they used AC/DC has something to do with it. But it was like, wow, this is, now I get it. And I've seen some people say, oh, they loved it until the point when he comes out with the proto-Iron Man suit and starts shooting up Arabs or whatever. And I'm thinking, I don't know, I just loved everything about it. It was great. I nothing about that screamed, the director to me, Jon Favreau. It just looked great. It looked like funny and it had AC/DC, and it just, I don't know, and it looked really well executed, unlike everything else Jon Favreau's ever done. So I was really excited. I thought, damn, I now exactly totally want to see this.
It's, it's most of the footage, well, it's a good chunk of the footage they showed at San Diego, and I had forgotten how, some of the jokes they had Downey Jr. do in front were, I thought, real, especially like he's getting his picture taken with a soldier and the soldier sort of throws up a V, you know, like your two fingers, a V for victory. Downey Jr.'s like, no gang signs.
He goes, oh, no, I'm sorry. And they goes, no, I'm kidding, throw up.
Really?
Yeah, it looks great. I mean, I'm like, okay, I get it. Now I want to see this thing, and I am going to... I'm no longer on the downside. Now it will disappoint me if it's not good, because I'm now really looking forward to it.
And after Favreau showed it at San Diego, he said, you know, one of the things he was most proud of was that, except for the last bit where the thing is flying with the jets, it was all practical. No CGI.
Yeah.
And in fact, the flying with the jets things, it just, like you, you know, as a guy who's periodically read Iron Man comics. I've never really been a huge Iron Man fan. You know, I accept most of the trailer, and you're like, oh, this looks like it'll work as a movie. And then you see it flying with the jets, and you're like, oh, suddenly my suspension of disbelief is gone.
Yeah.
No flights, you know, it's because it's a guy in a robot suit flying, and you're like, well, how is that?
I agree, but that's the comic, isn't it?
It is. And yet, on the page, it works. In the film, it's like, you better do a really good job of selling me on how that's working without flight surfaces and, you know, like, it's just one of those differences. On the comic page, I don't question it.
Yeah.
I should. Maybe that's a failing on my part. But on the screen, suddenly, it's like, oh, that's weird. Even the Rocketeer had a fin on the back of his helmet.
I was going to say, well, the problem with the Rocketeer, well, I mean, and I just totally suspended the Rocketeer, but we all know, you know, that they've never been able to figure out somebody to fly for more than 50 yeah. seconds with anything.
Yeah, it's around a minute with an actual jetpack.
Yeah.
Anyway, and of course you pointed out and were very excited about the fact that they were using the Iron Man song.
Oh my God! So when that I didn't mean AC/DC, I meant Iron Man. I meant Black Sabbath, and it was like, oh my God! See, that's perfect because I don't know. First of all, it's such a great thing for this, and then second of all, that's what I mean. It used to kill me, like when the Godzilla trailer came out. I'm thinking, damn, Godzilla the song by Blue Oyster Cult is so rockin' and so hardcore in a sense that it would have been perfect, and they almost like avoided it.
Well,
and
I just assumed that they Blue Oyster Cult wanted a kajillion dollars.
Well, they could have, but I mean, considering how much they spent on Godzilla, it seemed to me it would have been money well spent. Suffice it to say, in this particular thing, when it came on, it was like, yes. Because you can imagine people are going, okay, remember, Iron Man the song has nothing to do with Iron Man the comic book.
Right.
It's a totally different thing. But still, it's Iron Man. It's great. It's you know, I don't know. I just loved it. I got excited watching that video. It's like, holy damn, I really want to see this movie.
What was it? Oh, I sent you an email yesterday. Did you get it?
What was it about?
The subject line was DW.
Oh, yeah. Dragon Wars.
I said, Dragon Wars? Dragon Wars? Dragon Wars? Dragon Wars!
And what is the reference? Because I looked up, I had no clue about this, and all of a sudden I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes and going, oh my God, this movie got released. So I know nothing about the thing.
It's some movie that all of a sudden in the last week their advertising campaign began, and, you know, the first, like, a movie with dragons? What? I would think I would have heard about that by now. And it's, you know, it's just dragons in L.A. in the military trying to fight them. And I read,
well,
I go to Rotten Tomatoes to look it up, and apparently it's some Korean film.
Yeah, it's a Korean film, but filmed in the U.S. with U.S. actors. Not altogether different from the original Godzilla, although this one had American actors originally. So people like Robert Forster and other stuff, and apparently it's just god-awful, except for kind of cool effects.
and anyway, I just...
I've missed it. I didn't see any of the publicity for it. I'm out of the loop. But honestly, I was going, what the hell? Is Matt excited about this thing?
Being sarcastic.
I kind of assumed, but looking it up, and I started looking up the movie, and it just looked painful. Although I did like some of the effects. I liked the, you know, this kind of idea of these modern dragons, but it clearly looks like some Eastern, like, Korean or thought of, and I could imagine it being very popular over there, where in a way that it just doesn't translate here, and they don't realize that.
Did you see Reign of Fire?
No, I never saw Reign of Fire.
I haven't either, and yet I'm captivated by, you know, suddenly, like, seeing this makes me, oh, yeah, I kind of wanted to see that other one with
Matthew McConaughey. Yep.
One of my wife's imaginary boyfriends.
And I think Christian Bale was in it, too, wasn't he? I can't remember.
I don't know. Matthew McConaughey with a shaved head and then dragons. That's what I know about that film. But apparently it wasn't quite a piece of crap, so...
It got 20% on the tomato meter, but what was weird was they clearly didn't send it out for review because there was just a smattering of reviews. So, and you saw the reviewers were all, you know, halfway.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, it's coming up on the 15-minute mark. I'm going to suggest we take a break.
Pause. Yeah, okay.
And
let me stop.
Back. So,
we're back. We'll just edit back. Are you editing around a same cut?
Yeah, I'll do my best.
Whatever. So, maybe, all right. I think we can agree that Audacity as a program leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, it is free. That's the one good thing.
Okay, so moving on down my... did you see that there are... And I pulled this off Dark Horizons. They're going forward with a Tron remake.
Yeah, I saw that. They've been talking about this, and there was a lot of movement about... 4 years ago, when they were coming out with the Tron 2.0 video game, and they were back talking to Steve Lisberger.
Who's apparently a producer on this.
Yeah,
that directed the first one.
Yeah. But it went nowhere because the video game, which I liked, didn't do that well, and they were talking to Jeff Bridges, and he was actually kind of sure, you know, and so now they're back with a whole new thinking on it. You know, that first movie was so interesting and unique, because they hired this guy who, named Steve Lisberger, who basically created commercials and was and did other stuff in a really unique graphic way, and also it had the very obviously the very first real computer graphics used in commercials, but all of the techniques he did were completely never done before, and what's interesting is never done since. So the weird glow and on the actors when they're in the computer
thing.
Which
interestingly had nothing to do with computer graphics.
No, yeah, exactly. It was, and it was weird. He filmed with like a super 65 millimeter Panavision in black and white, and then used all these weird techniques that came up with a unique look, but none of it was ever, it was invented fully for the movie, and none of them has ever been used again. It's the weirdest thing. It's a unique, one of my favorite movies of all time, but a totally unique thing, and I'd totally be into a Tron 2. I don't know what other audience is out there for it, and I love that video game. That was an awesome video game.
To me, I think a lot of people will see it because of the uniqueness factor, because it's a huge nerd, you know, inbred nerd geek audience like us. But on the other hand, I don't know what they can do that's new and different, because there's much more of an effort now to try new and different things. And I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying it's a lot harder today to do anything computer graphic-y that's new and different, because I feel like a lot of people are now playing in that space. So we'll see. You know, I think about seeing ads for that sort of French black and white animated Renaissance. Do you remember anything about that? It was sort of a noirish.
Oh yeah. Vaguely. Yep.
And it's one of those things that looks really cool, and then you end up never seeing it.
Yeah.
Stuff like that seems to, or the I want to say Richard Linklater. Am I transposing the name?
No, it's Linklater. That's right.
Yeah, with the
Waking Life and
the Dick
Scanner
one.
Darkly.
Yeah, Scanner Darkly. You know, doing things, interesting things with the rotoscoping. So, you know, I look at that and I say those are really interesting and new looks that aren't necessarily doing that well, you know, commercially. But I don't know. I'm just kind of rambling.
Yeah.
Cross that off the list. So last weekend I was in Tucson for exactly how you would expect.
Must be unbelievably hot down there.
It is, and I don't know, they had some sort of storm system come through in the past week, and all anyone there would talk about is how humid it was. Yeah. And you're just like rolling your eyes going, okay, I'm ready to stop talking about the weather now. But my wife's got some cousins that live in L.A. and work in the industry that I've talked about before. And one of the guys, it's a couple, and the guy is actually an editor and works on various TV shows, which I won't name because I don't want to get him in trouble or anything.
Yep.
But he said he thinks he got, I don't know if it was his last job or the one before, because of a Lebowski quote. And he is as prepared to throw down with the big Lebowski quotes as you or I.
So. I'm infinitely proud of the fact that you and I sat there and watched that damn thing 100 times, got totally into it, completely separate from knowledge that any other person was as infatuated by that movie, which shows that it's a pure thing. You know, people get into stuff because, oh, everybody else is into it. But this is one thing, and I imagine other people are like that. They got into it like we did, completely unaware that everybody else was getting into that thing like that.
Yeah, apparently, he was in this interview, and the guy says, so you're going to get called dude a lot. Is that okay? And my friend's response was, you know, dude, duder, el duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing. And he said he's pretty sure, based on the guy's reaction and how the rest of it went, that that's really what got him the interview or got him the position, which I think is hysterical.
Nice.
But the other thing, my wife's actual cousin, the the female, so that's kind of a weird way to put it, but she's sort of a DP cinematographer person who does a lot of work on lower budget stuff now. But she's got a friend who's actually works at the Academy. I'm not actually sure what the Academy does, because the only time you ever hear about it is around the Oscars, but apparently they're constantly doing screenings, like, you know, two or three screenings a week of something. Just random stuff, like, here's a screening for Star Wars. Oh, but Lucas would only send the special edition version. He wouldn't allow them to show the original version.
The original, yep.
And so she's constantly, you know, this buddy of hers is constantly asking her, you know, do you want to go see a screening of this or that? And I was just so pissed and so jealous. You know, how different, both of us, how different our lives would be if we actually lived in L.A. and had the opportunity to go do all those things. But on the other hand, you know, my time... You know, I don't have time to do that stuff now. How would I make time for it there when the opportunity to do so much more is there?
Yeah.
But, you know, and the other aspect to that is the real benefit to being able to do those things is that it's a perfect presentation. You know, it's in focus, it's in frame, the reels are put together in the correct order. You know,
there's only one theater in Seattle that consistently seems to do that, and that's the Cinerama.
Yeah, and, you know,
where you walk in there and there's no bleed over off the edge of the screen, right. It sounds
great. The bulb is bright, which is something nobody ever realizes is a problem. You know, with theater owners trying to cheap out, run the bulbs at lower brightness to squeeze more time out of them because they're expensive.
And as Roger Ebert effectively pointed out, that it has no effect on the length, on how long that bulb lasts.
You know, and it's, even beyond going to special screenings, they've got the arc light there.
You know, I was in LA for 24 hours a couple weeks ago, and I was in Hollywood, but I did nothing. I went to a bed and breakfast and then left, but I drove by a bunch of cool stuff, and there was even down there, and part of it was kind of seedy, but they had like all kinds of theaters that were showing really cool movies that I've been wanting to see, and you drive by like the Sound Editors Guild and the Motion Picture Editors Guild and all this other stuff, and I'm thinking, damn, I want to live down here for a little bit just to be part of that whole scene. So
yeah, he didn't seem to think there was going to be a strike, so I don't know.
So let me tell you about my experience down there. So I went down there to be filmed for this documentary for the History Channel about left-wing terrorism in the 1970s. And what was funny was it was 111 degrees in Los Angeles.
Now, were you actually in L.A. or were you in the Valley?
I was in Hollywood. I think one block off of Sunset Boulevard.
Okay, so that's actually... Because I have found that the Valley is always hotter than the city itself.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Where we were, it was hot, but apparently it gets hotter in other areas, but it was awful. But anyway, so they rented this bed and breakfast for this lady who's filming me for this documentary for some British outfit, and it's going to be on like the History Channel. She was also doing a documentary at the same time about the Maharishi Yogi. So she's interviewing me, and then the next day she has to interview Mike Love of the Beach Boys and David Lynch, the director. And as I was telling you in my email, if you add the three of us together and divide by three, it makes me kind of cool. but anyway, so she was freaking out because they had no budget for location or anything, and they thought they rented this bed and breakfast by looking online and seeing pictures of it, thinking this will be great, not realizing the traffic outside was just oppressively loud. So it looked like it was going to be a great solution. And then the other problem with it was it was so hot, and this is like a 120-year-old house, and they have air conditioning in the living quarters, but it's so loud. So she did set up for me to interview there in this bedroom, and they set up these hot lights, and then they would have to basically turn off the air conditioning while they interviewed me, as it would start baking, and I would start looking like Albert Brooks in broadcast news. And so this interview took 4 hours of like fits and starts in 15-minute increments, kind of like the Mustard A&A's webcast. And it was painful, and I have no idea if she pulled off the other thing, because she had this kind of fixer that was working for her. You know, you hire a local guy to help you, and this poor kid just did not know what he was doing. He was all, and she was just really freaking out because he was not much help at all. And, but anyway, I have no idea what she did, but it was fascinating to see her because she had, it was funny, she had the same, HDV camcorder I have, basically,
just,
a little bit higher end.
I was just
going
to ask what the equipment was.
But you know what's funny is she didn't record in HDV. She recorded in mini DV format. So even though it's an awesome camera, she recorded in mini DV. And it was interesting the setup they have. Like they have a lav mic for me, and you know, she basically, it's a stereo track, and on one track she recorded a lav mic, and on another, she had a fixed mic just for safety's sake, so she wasn't going to screw up. And it was only her doing it. She didn't have a crew. She set up her own lights, set up everything, and had this one guy helping a little bit, but it was amazing how, what clearly a good job she was doing totally on her own.
Wow.
And she hated it because she wanted to have a crew, but this one didn't have one, but it was still, from my perspective, it was cool. It was really exciting because I was realizing all the little things I do wrong and what a great thing she did in a short period of time. So,
yeah,
but it was, and equally also, it's like, wow, she's like a real journalist. She asked me great questions and she had questions for 3 hours. It was
great.
Damn, even I couldn't have come up with that many questions. So, but it was cool and it was neat to be like, you know, I felt like if you ever want to have your ego stroked, have somebody fly you to another city and spend 4 hours interviewing you about a subject you know something about. It was really kind
of
cool.
Not a lot of documentaries about Simpsons quotes or, anyway.
Anyway, so it was cool and it was neat to be in LA and I wished I had a lot more time. I mean, I was in Hollywood. I didn't even get to see the Walk of Fame, didn't do anything. I literally took a taxi to that place, stayed in the bed and breakfast and took a taxi home. $50 to take a taxi from LAX to Hollywood.
Wow, what a screw job.
Yeah. That's the way it is. That's the standard,
LAX
right?
Is not that far. It's right. It's well, in the city. It's on the water, but
I know, but there's no really direct freeways or anything, so it's a 45 to 50 minute drive, and that's works out the way it works out.
Lord.
So briefly, I was just going to mention that. So I had to put together my very first HDV video thing for my job. I put together an auction video, and so I recorded it and put it all together, and then I was starting to edit it. It just was lurching, and it would not. I could edit it, but it would not export. Now, I could import it into my laptop, but it was exporting and fits and starts. And
now, hold on. It's not a playback issue. It's an actual export?
Yeah. What happens is it's weird. The way when you import it into your computer, it transcodes the issue. And it does that fine. And to export it, it has to transcode it into a stream that you can take into your computer and or into your hard drive. I'm sorry, your camera, and because you have to get it back onto the camera. It's the only way you can play this thing. And in retrospect, later I realized I had a bum. Part of the problem was I have a bum FireWire. Wire,
wow.
But that wasn't the whole thing. It basically just wouldn't work, and I was freaking out because I had this great video, and I could generate a DVD of it if I wanted to, but it would have been 1/4 the resolution. So then I realized, okay, god dang it, I guess I have to go get a new computer because it just simply needs like a Core 2 Duo kind of processor to deal with it. So I got a new computer, which we needed to get anyway, but I wasn't anticipating getting it, edited the whole thing in there. I copied all the files and edited it, and then I realized later it wouldn't let me export because the version of Adobe Premiere that I have is not, for Vista, you needed to get the latest version. So there I am. Now, normally I have friends at Adobe that can get me, for nonprofits, really cheap copies. But there I am at the last minute having to spend $300 on an upgrade to Adobe Premiere. So this little cheap project suddenly in the space of 2 days cost me $1,000. And then finally, and I'm able to export it, and it just looks incredible. And we showed this at this gentleman's house, and this gentleman's very wealthy. And you know how when you're going you know, you had to get your high-resolution TV and your HD TV, and you were worried about all these compromises and stuff. Well, when you are in the financial stratosphere, there are no compromises, because this guy has this enormous high-def screen, and every input known to man could take it, and I was able, we did it with HDMI, and it just, oh, it looked beautiful. It was like, you know, I'm like in a part of the video, I'm being interviewed, and you look on my shoulder, and I look close, and I realize, oh my God, I can see like cat hair all over my shoulder that you would have never seen anywhere else. I mean, it just was stunning. It looked awesome. So
maybe run that lint brush over your,
I should have, but you would have never seen that before. So anyway, it was really awesome to be able to like film and utilize it. What sucks is there's no real delivery mechanism. I can save if you have a good enough computer, I can save a Windows media file of it that looks great at high resolution, but effectively to play things right now, you can't really play it on a computer without using your camcorder as the mechanism, because they don't really have effective high def burning that's cheap enough on HD, HD DVDs. So anyway, it was pretty awesome. And by the way, this guy whose house we were at, this is a guy who, and I won't mention his name, but suffice it to say, he worked for Microsoft for a very long time and was, you know, they've had about 150,000 employees at Microsoft. This guy was like number 50. Uh-huh. And at one point I'm trying to, my computer, it's just chugging along, and I'm going, you know, I don't think my hard drive can keep up. I don't think it's putting it out. And he goes, no, that's not your problem. And I go, well, no, I think it is. And then I started to realize, oh, this is the guy who invented how your operating system writes to a hard drive. If there's any guy, in fact, every packet of information starts out with the initials of this guy, because he put it in there because you need to have two initials. This guy knows more about it than any human on the planet. I realized, you know, maybe I won't actually contradict him.
That's pretty funny.
He knows what I'm talking about. But anyway, so I was really excited. I'm now kind of getting excited about video again, because it reminded me of when I was first doing video like 8 years ago. And back then it was a lot of voodoo. You had to get a special card to take because they didn't have FireWire ports. And it was always a question, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? And I built my first DVD before there was any real programs, and it just barely worked. And now it's sort of the same way. It's like we're moving into this new realm of HD, and it's sort of like a black art for the next year or two until everything catches up with it. So it's exciting. I love being on the cutting edge with stuff like that.
So let's move on. Jon Stewart announced as the host of the Oscars this year.
Yep.
Or the next Oscars. I was quite thrilled. Seems like
I am too. I was surprised hearing other people go, you know, yeah, whatever. Yeah, well, he didn't do that great last time. I'm going, sure he did. He did great. Although, in terms of viewers, he didn't do that great, apparently.
Well, we are totally the Stewart.
The demo.
Yes, we are whores for Jon Stewart.
Absolutely.
But I thoroughly enjoyed when he hosted, and I'm really looking. I mean, I'm going to watch it anyway because I'm a movie dork. But I was quite pleased with that selection.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Did you see this? That David Cross and Bob Odenkirk are supposedly working on a new show for HBO.
I did. I read HBO and BBC, sort of like extras and The Office or whatever and stuff like that. But yeah, I did. But I was reading their website, and it's hard to parse through the ten layers of irony on David Cross. So, but it looked exciting and good. And he was sort of pitching it as it's really a Bob Odenkirk show that stars David Cross. You know, that was what I was reading at that, because Bob Odenkirk's, you know, director, and he talked about it being a Bob Odenkirk sitcom that he'll be starring in, kind of thing. So it's hard to gauge what it's about, because Odenkirk has definitely moved into the realm of being more of a director these days, too.
Yeah, we'll see. And I'm curious to know who moved, because Cross loves it in New York, and Odenkirk, as far as I know, was in L.A.
Like, yeah, I think they're just bouncing around. Who knows? I saw that they were filming it. They're going to the Vancouver Comedy Festival next week, and I was thinking, dang, I was trying to figure out where they're playing and if there's tickets. I thought, damn, that might be a good road trip to go up there and get another one of your car stereo stolen again.
Bite me.
Sorry. But I was thinking that would be kind of fun. Man, one of the best nights I ever had was that Mr. Show Tour. That was such a funny, funny show.
I never saw it live, so.
You didn't go with us to that?
No, the thing I went to you with was Kids in the Hall.
No, I'm talking about in Seattle, the Moore Theater. Didn't you go with us? The Mr. Show Show?
Oh, you're right. That was the whole Odenkirk is the fake candidate.
What?
That's right. Remember,
I don't remember that part. I remember they did some new stuff and some bits from
it was
the,
like they were touring America with Odenkirk as the candidate, like a senator.
Yeah. Okay, I don't remember that. I just remember it being a Mr. Show Show. I don't remember the candidate. I just remember it was they had about half of the cast and
I had totally forgotten about that.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah. Cool. What else do I have here? Oh, this is just another random movie note before we move into other areas. I saw in Dark Horizons, Tobey Maguire is attached to a project to develop a live-action Robotech.
I read that and I was like stunned.
I mean, and that was on the air when I was growing up. Robotech is a huge, huge thing for me. I loved it. I'm sure if I watched it now, it would be horrendous.
Absolutely.
But, because that was some of the first Japanese animation that had been brought over to America and redubbed and really put out there with some force.
Well, not really the first, it's the second, because the first was things like Marine Boy and
Speed Racer. But it was the first to really do it with penetration.
Yeah.
To really have to really penetrate and be aware, I don't know, maybe Voltron was first, I don't know, some of those. But it was the I just was so into Robotech, and speaking as a huge fan as a kid, the thought of making this live action just gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
Because like the aliens in the first part are the Zentradi, and they're basically giant purple-skinned aliens, and how are you going to do that on live action without it looking completely stupid?
Well, supposedly, I didn't see Transformers yet. I almost saw it. A Transformers started 15 minutes earlier. I would have seen that instead of Shoot 'em Up. But it was, but apparently they did a good job. I don't know. And I mean, I've been hearing, I'm kind of excited about the Speed Racer thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, well Speed Racer, to me, isn't quite as...
Yeah, it's
I mean,
more I, totally live.
Granted, I know nothing about Speed Racer. There's a car called the Mach 5, there's a girl, there's racing, that's all I know. But
yeah, I never got into any of them, but the two that I probably saw more than anything of my age when I was a kid, a real young kid, like in the early 70s, was Speed Racer and Marine Boy. But I never got into the Voltron, that old kind of stuff. I know nothing about it.
And I'm pretty sure they're making a Voltron movie, too. I can't remember if it's live action. I think it is. The Lion Voltron as opposed to the Car Voltron.
Yeah.
I don't know. Even as a kid, you recognize that it was the same plot over and over.
Yeah.
Like, something had to come together for them to have an excuse to form the robot, and which it did, and there was a 30-second fight, and the robot won, and that was the episode. And you're like, even as a kid, you recognize it's the same thing over and over.
Yep.
Anyway. Okay, so I can scratch that off the list. So, do you want to dive into video games?
Sure.
What's that?
I said sure.
Okay, I didn't hear you sure. So I borrowed BioShock from a friend of mine, BioCrack. Pretty much spent the entire Labor Day weekend playing it.
Yep.
Wow. I mean, it's a very, very, very well-reviewed game. I hadn't planned on getting it, but all the reviews and everyone saying it was so awesome, I was like, okay, maybe I'll get it. And then my friend got it and was willing to lend it to me, so I didn't need to buy it, but... A very, very well-done game, and unique in a couple of areas. So I saw that you started posting up some achievements, so you have purchased it.
Yep.
How far along are you?
Oh, I finished it. The only thing that sucks is, yeah, I've got like 720 points, but what sucks is there's something is screwed up with the way I played it, because I can't get one of the little sisters to show up. So it sucks. I played through the whole game, but I've gone back. I've done everything. I'm pretty much going to have to play through the whole thing again just to get her to show up. So consequently, I cannot max out these achievements. I'm like stuck at 720 because a couple of them are, although there's a couple others I can get, but they dealt with every little sister one on the Apollo what do they call it, the Apollo Square kind of thing. There's a couple places where clearly she's supposed to show up, and there's a Big Daddy going there, and I've spent hours just hanging around doing this and that. No little sister. I read on one little forum somewhere, oh, she's around in a corner somewhere crying. It's like, no, she isn't. She's definitely not.
Oh, that's a bummer. I mean, I pretty much played it as much as I'm going to play. I finished it. I did not. There's a couple more achievements that I could go back and make an effort to get. Like, I need to take more pictures of one of the big daddies. And so there's that. And then the related, done all the research one. And then there's the found all the audio diaries. I managed to miss one or two. I guess I don't know how many. And I think I missed the weapon upgrade, the last weapon upgrade one, and it's just the ones where it's like, you know, in order to get them requires a lot of hunting around.
Yeah.
And because it's not my game, it's a borrowed game, I don't feel, like, to me, the reward of getting those achievements isn't worth the hours I would have to put in of really needle and haystack searching for the one little bit that I missed.
Yeah, I think I might just go through and play it again, and this time, even though I hate doing it, this time go through the track of killing all the little sisters, just to see the other ending and to start getting all the that extra atom that you get with it. Although I hate that. I'm just not into, like, honestly, I don't, like, think of video games as real, but whenever you have these, let's do a good track and a bad track, I always take the good track.
You were talking about how well it's done in terms of, and yes, there's a good track and a bad track. Yeah. And yeah, I'm just like you. I am always choosing the goody goody. You know, I'm gonna be, you know, the good Jedi and not the bad Jedi.
Yeah.
And I'm very much like that myself. But I have a friend who started playing it, and he said, you know what it is? It's, you know, and one of the knocks against this game is, as a game, it's,
yep,
in one way, it's not that good a game in terms of everything you need to do is right in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, you stumble across the first aid kit, and, you know, there's a bit, you know, you need to do a bit of exploring, you need to make sure you go into every room, but, you know, it's not a sandbox game at all.
No.
And it's not designed to be that way. It's designed to be very specific. There's no multiplayer aspect. It's like, you know what? This type of game is a single-player game, and we're not going to waste time and energy wasting resources.
They also made it so it's not... So there's really almost no penalty for dying. You go to these little chambers, which is great, honestly. I get tired of, okay, starting a level, getting all the way to the end, and then something. Then you have to kind of start from scratch. But by the same token, this is a game that it's, if you're a really good player, really bad player, it's going to take you about the same amount of time to finish the game.
Yeah, although I ended up just reloading my saves instead of the Vita Chambers because I wanted all of my health and all my Eve. And
no, I agree with you, and I did that too, but it's, if you don't do a lot of savings, it makes no difference, you know.
I agree. But my friend made a really good point. It's that basically you're going through, it's a set narration, and you're playing a book. You're playing the main character in a book.
Yep.
And it's very, you know, obviously it's very visual, but, and he said, and he really liked that. And I was like, wow, that's a really, really good point, because you're in this narrative, and it's a really engrossing narrative. I mean, a lot of stories have a plot line, or a lot of games have a story, but a lot of times it's superfluous. It's like, let me just beat this guy up. Who cares? But in this one, it's really interesting, and you know, the various plot twists and...
Well, I agree. I think it's done. A lot of games do that, but it did it better than any other one. I mean, it was legitimately engrossing. There's games where I've played through, like I played through Prey recently, and it was, and it had some convoluted, stupid Native American alien thing. And within the second cutscene, I was just hitting start to fast forward. I could care less about the story. It was just so stupid. Just get me the next monster. I'm going to shoot him. I'm going to kill him. Here, I was really... I mean, they created a really fully realized world that that was engrossing enough for me to actually listen through and think and be intrigued by it, you know?
I completely agree, and it's... The whole, you know, the setting was beautiful. It's a beautiful game. It's well executed. And the whole, you know, dystopian, you know, Anya Rand aspect to it.
Ayn Rand.
Well, I've heard so many different pronunciations.
They're wrong. I've read up on it. It is definitely Ayn Rand, and you can be for sure because there's a YouTube Donahue clip where he interviews her, and it's definitely Ayn Rand.
I think most people just do Ayn Rand because they look at AYN and they're like, I don't know what to do with that.
They do, and they're wrong. But it was it did focus on this whole kind of notion of a person who created a world that was
independent of government.
Yeah, completely free market, this and that, and then the challenges thereof. And
of course, this whole genetic modification thing is what is in the game. And the fact that one of the characters in the game is named Atlas, and I thought that was pretty funny.
And of course, Atlas is the Ayn Rand had a book called Atlas Shrugged.
Right, that's what I meant.
Yeah, and then there was also, the whole thing delved into that. It looked great, played great, except for the one hitch about the little girl not showing up.
And at the same time, and it's not like this, there isn't a lot, it's not like the game is a hidden treatise on objectivism. It's all pretty much surface level.
Yeah, exactly.
And objectivism being Ayn Rand, Ayn Rand's...
her philosophy.
Sort of philosophy.
Yeah.
But every time I think of that, I think of two things, and one is that in Bob Woodward's book about Alan Greenspan, Alan Greenspan was a devotee
of
Rand's philosophy, and I always thought that was, okay, there's a guy who has a fundamental impact on the world, and he's got a different view of things. Interesting.
Did you see yesterday that he came out and announced and basically called Bush an idiot and said Clinton was way better? I thought, oh, man, that's going to hit hard. Because so many people, they worship at the altar of Greenspan, and for him to say something like that, that's pretty amazing.
And the other thing I always think of when I think of Rand is... the old South Park episode when it was revealed that Chief Barb Brady couldn't read and through the course of the episode learned to read. And at the end, he's like, I read this book. And he holds up Atlas Shrugged, and it was the worst piece of crap ever. I'm never reading again.
I think of the Simpsons episode where Maggie gets put in the Ayn Rand school for tots, and there's a whole, it's like a B plot to another episode. I can't remember what it was, but they were doing a spoof of The Great Escape where, I always like that. But the thing about Ayn Rand is you'll end up, or Ayn Rand, you'll end up hearing out of the blue some person who's mildly intelligent, but not really so, who will start talking about John Galt and Ayn Rand and objectivism, and you realize they don't have a clue. It's this kind of weird flavor of libertarianism that they get excited about because they're visioning this utopian ideal and they've never actually thought it through. And then every once in a while somebody will have a proposal like in the Andean Mountains, we're going to create this world, and it was so funny, like there was this group that decided to create they were going to make plans to create this utopian world somewhere in South America, and then they created a constitution because they realized we don't have a government, but we have to do this, and quickly they start having internal fights, and then like a separate group started putting their proposal together, and even in a world without government, you start to realize how they can't even get along and they need government to help parse through these rules. It's kind of funny how people really get excited about her without really thinking through the practical ramifications of how it just doesn't work. But anyway, I remember one time when I was in high school, I was looking for scholarships, and then I saw this Ayn Rand. I knew nothing about her, but I knew the scholarship was for $25,000, and you had to write some essay. And I remember thinking, damn, and I actually got the book because you had to write some essay about Atlas Shrugged or The Fountainhead. So I remember getting it and reading about 10 pages into it going, oh, my God, and just giving up on that scholarship. So clearly they were looking for some junior, Milton Friedman type, and I just gave up.
So the other big news tech, let's finish on video games. I don't have any other video game news other than, Halo 3 is coming out in a couple of weeks.
Is it really? I didn't know
September
Halo.
September 25th.
I'm just joking. You can't miss the Halo 3.
I didn't get your level of sarcasm. The marketing onslaught.
Yep. I'm going to get it, but honestly, I am, you know, if you were to add up some of the games, it's not that critical to me, but I'm going to get it, looking forward to it, but it's not the, I don't know, it's just, I mean, it's weird to think of a Xbox 360 game that you can buy at 7-Eleven and wherever else they're selling that thing.
I didn't know they were going to have it there.
Oh, yeah. You go to 7-Elevens, you can pre-order it.
Oh, Christ. I am so not pre-ordering games. Oh, I so hate
never,
that.
Never. Although in retrospect, you know, it took me 2 weeks to track down a BioShock game.
Which completely retarded.
Yeah. And in this day and age, I go, damn. I mean, I just wish they would move on and start selling them through, even at an additional premium, selling them through Xbox Live. It just makes no sense that if somebody wants the game, they shouldn't have it.
I agree, although I think, judging by comments that E has made in the Major Nelson podcast, that would cost, it sounds like that would cost Microsoft a ton of money right now.
Really?
Because, well, one of the episodes they were talking about the BioShock demo, and E is sort of the co-host of the Major Nelson podcast, who basically runs the live infrastructure.
Yeah,
services.
The cool person, not the annoying chick that comes in and annoys everybody.
And anyway, he made some comment like, "Oh God, that's costing he a ton of money." And so clearly, when there's really high bandwidth, you know, his servers take a hit, and I'm not quite sure how that monetizes in terms of what they end up paying. And clearly, they're eating it because they're trying to sell this whole experience and service.
Well, I just look at it this way. Okay, so BioShock costs $60 retail. Now, the thing that Valve Interactive got tired of is giving away 50% to Vivendi or whoever just for putting it out in stores. Literally, they would sell a game for $50 and they'd get 25 of it at the most. So they said, we're going to develop our own system that will have Valve. We'll sell them maybe later, but at least initially, if somebody wants to buy it and download online, we'll do that. So with BioShock, that was sold on Valve and sold that way. So let's say this game is $60. Well, if they give Microsoft just $5 of those dollars, they're still going to make $20, $30 more dollars than they would otherwise. And $5 has to cover the vast majority of that download cost.
Well, it could be. I think that in order for them to do that, they clearly need to step up their infrastructure even more. Because,
no, I agree.
I mean, because then you've got, if you release, you know, Halo 3 via Xbox Live, you got to think the vast majority of people, you know, suddenly hit those servers at once.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody is slamming those servers at once.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yes and no. Do it like Valve did. You can start buying it now, and it will go live on this day. So pretty much like when Half-Life 2 came out, I downloaded Half-Life 2 3 weeks before it came out. And then it unlocked on the certain date. So it...
Well, that's interesting. I'm not enough of a network engineer to know if that solves the problem enough, but that's...
No, I agree. Given in terms of the content, I mean, it's clearly just a bandwidth issue because let's put it this way. I bought a high-def movie on there, and BioShock takes up less space than a high-def movie. And I bought V for Vendetta. It downloaded. I spent $4 for it, so the cost of bandwidth at the most could be a dollar. So you got to think in just terms of economics, the only real reason not to do it is this thing that you're be screwing all these retail outlets. You better be making a full commitment to the future of video game distribution is through online, because places like GameStop are going to be really ticked at you if you're making such a commitment to downloadable, you know, distribution. So, I mean, I think that's probably the main reason, but that's just me.
And then, as we've talked about many times, Orange Box coming out in early October. And what's interesting to me about this is, you know, clearly it's got Half-Life 2, which we've talked about.
Yep.
And then the Episode 1 and Episode 2 follow-up missions to that.
And Portal.
And then it's got this game called Portal. And then it's got Team Fortress.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me is they're really doing a push with Team Fortress. And, I mean, it's hard to say how much of this is external, but... On the video game websites I checked, they're like, oh, look, there's another Team Fortress 2 marketing video, and they've taken one of the characters from this game
yeah.
and created this whole cinematic thing, and you have to and then release them, and they're available on Xbox Live, the video marketplace, or you can watch them on the net, and you have to wonder how much effort is that taking, because there's just so much content in this one game, this one box.
Well, the weird thing about Team Fortress, Team Fortress was originally, it was a mod of, like a independent mod of Half-Life 1, and it's still so incredibly popular, as it's essentially, it was Halo before Halo, and it was the thing that everybody played, and it's still hugely popular, and it's creaky, and it's old, but people still love playing it. And the thing with Team Fortress 2, they totally redid it and created these cartoony different characters. I love the look of it. It looks great. But the thing is I'm wondering, is it going to be like Shadowrun? Can you play against computer people PCs?
I haven't heard that at all. I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
Because if they do it right, and Valve is so good at this stuff, it's entirely possible, at least if you're just playing on Xbox Live, that it's going to give Halo a run for its money, because Team Fortress is incredible, and I don't know, just the look of it makes me want to play a little bit more than Halo. And the thing about it is, you have different types of characters. It really is conducive.
And these character videos are very well done. They're very clever, and to me, I mean, those could even be ads, because they're smart. And they're funny, and they make me want to get the product.
There's nothing forced or
artificial about them.
Valve is such a great company.
Anyway, we should pause.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So I think we've about run video games into the ground.
Yep.
Next and last up for me, at least, would be technology. So we've a bunch of stuff has gone on. And I, interestingly, because of our erratic schedule, we never discussed the iPhone.
I know.
And so, what last week we had the iPod Touch. Yep. This is the most disturbing athlete's foot commercial I've ever seen.
The iPod Touch athlete's foot commercial.
It's the Tenactin.
Oh, with the little weird looking.
It's an animated, incredible,
it is.
And the foot was
with the
okay.
toenail. Oh God, it's awful.
Anyway, back to, sorry, I've got a football game on mute. anyway, so iPod Touch, which is essentially the iPhone without the phone, and the big one of the big advantages there is that the memory is up to 16 gigabytes over 8. And then they dropped the price of the iPhone to $400.
Yep.
And then eliminated the 4-gigabyte model, because hardly anybody was buying it. So, I don't know,
Everything I love about it, except for I don't understand why they don't have a hard drive model.
I think my guess would be battery life. That running the hard drive and starting and stopping would put too much of a hit on the battery.
Could be either that or fill it up with more space, because that is just, I mean, how much, if it's like the iPhone, how much of that is taken up with
I think almost
operating
a system. I think it's like 750 megabytes is OS.
It just is not big enough. It's not big enough.
I agree. I mean, I'm really looking at these, and I'm thinking, I want one.
I'm looking, it's a perfect thing for TV. It's a perfect thing for movies. Despite what people say, I think it's plenty big. And I just think that, I mean, and I guess either that or put 32 gigs in there. I mean, that's the only thing that would matter to me.
When they announced the price drop, I was talking with my buddy online and saying, oh my God, I'm really, really, really thinking about it now. And I went back and read a couple reviews of when the iPhone originally came out, and I was thinking, all right, just calm down, let's take a rational look at this. And then looking at some other rumors coming out of, there's iPhone version 2 is probably going to hit before the holidays.
Yeah.
Which will, looking at AppleInsider.com, maybe have 3G as opposed to just the AT&T Edge network.
Yeah, that's what everybody seems to think.
And then probably get a space bump to 32, or let's say probably to 16. And then, I obviously, that would be more. I don't know if it would be 500 or 600.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, just before I was going to Los Angeles, I'm freaking out because I love airplanes and I hate airplanes. I was worried I was going to get stuck in the middle and stuff, but the biggest thing that was freaking me out was that I think my iPod got stolen. I haven't, like, found the thing. And so I was thinking, I need to get a new one. And, of course, it's, like, 3 days before the new announcement. So it's like, there's no way I'm going to go buy a new one. And I'm glad I didn't. Of course, I ended up not having an iPod on the way down to California. But the Nanos with video now, those are great options. I would have totally got one of those. I mean, it was like, damn, that this is a great thing. That's the one thing nobody's really talking about is what a
Everybody seems to
focus on the iTouch, which is great, but I'm thinking of the Nanos.
No, I like Alex Lindsay and the This Week in Media guys and the Leo Laporte and the Twit guys. They're definitely talking about the Nano and saying, A, because it's so thin, the fact that it's oddly proportioned looks, it's okay in person, and they're saying this, the fact that video is now available at this price point really continues to go a long way in terms of helping video podcasters, of which, you know, Alex Lindsay does a lot of work, and saying there's going to be so much growth in the next year or two in terms of video podcasting, and that the more things have video on them, and certainly having video available at this price point, which I think $150 is the low one for the 4 gigabyte model.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, it's not really, even though it has video, that's enough to do like a couple of shows. But still, it's a great thing, you know, great deal.
I agree. Anyway, so I'm looking at and really weighing. Okay, am I going to get an iPhone? Because to me, even though the iPod Touch is a really cool thing. To me, the benefit of combining two devices into one and having only one thing in my pocket is worth it. It's worth whatever the premium I'm paying to get the phone aspect is. So that's, you know, the iPod Touch is cool, but for me, it's not a thing.
My phone is my work pace for my phone, and so it's always about that. So yeah, what is it, 2 years from now when that you can get it from other networks, it won't happen for me. Totally agree with you. I'm in the same boat you're in.
And so I was really thinking about it. I was like, you know what? It's just wait. Like I've got like a 3-year-old phone now. I'm with AT&T, but I'm out of contract, so I'm okay in terms of, you know, not like I didn't just get a new phone a year ago and I'm eating that. But for me, really, it's like, well, just wait for the next version. Wait for the next version. Wait till there's more memory, because I don't actually have any video. I don't know. I would probably start downloading video podcasts more. I don't know that I would actually buy a bunch of shows.
Tons of video.
Because you don't have cable, so that's...
Yeah, that's right. Have you been hearing these reports about them saying, essentially, Apple has forgotten about Apple TV and acted like it never existed, and they haven't updated, haven't done anything? Have you ever heard those reports?
I've just heard what I've heard from the, you know, the MacBreak Weekly guys and the Twit guys, and saying, you know, is it possible that they're giving up on it? And
I think crazy they would. It seems like such a great, even though I don't have
one. Seems, you know, and then somebody asked about that at the, two Apple events ago. And, you know, and they said, you know, we're not commenting on that now. And so you have to wonder if it's, I would almost guess that maybe they're waiting for Leopard, for the next OS to come out, which will enable, you know, there's been talk, and we've discussed this before, about enabling a peer-to-peer high-def download network.
Yeah.
And needing the new OS to do that.
Is that going to be, but will it work with Windows, because most of the people bought ITV, Apple TV, I imagine, are Windows people.
I don't know. But that could be what they're waiting for in terms of really enabling that, because initially I was definitely going to get Apple TV, and I still might, but, you know, as things have gone on, I've been like, well, I've been living without it okay so far. And it's the lack of HD content. You know, I need a lot more HD content for me to invest in it, and I'm willing to, but at this point, I need a little more than what I'm getting. So, are they going to forget about it? I don't think so, mainly because TV, It's not like TV is going anywhere, and I think it's part of their strategy to be in the living room and to connect the computer and to give people a really compelling user experience with, you know, being able to get TV shows and movies off of iTunes in a really simple and easy to do way. And is that compelling enough that people say, you know what, I really don't need my cable system now?
Yeah.
And it's close, but I don't think it's quite there yet for everyday people. And so whether or not they're, you know, it's sort of their stealth strategy, or it's just, you know, it's their foot in the door and we're really going to kick it up, you know, as soon as we can, but we're going to stick it out. Or, you know, as a corollary to that, maybe it's, we'll figure out a better way to do the same thing. You know, maybe we reduce it to a dongle you plug into your TV that has some wireless capability that's streamed from your computer, and maybe that's how they're going to do it.
Well, you know, it's weird.
So they may rethink their strategy, but I don't think they're going to give up on the TV aspect.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that's really stressing me out is that whole NBC thing where they got in a match with NBC, and NBC says, okay, we're not going to give any new content, which, and everybody all together in unison said, oh, NBC is so stupid, and I think they were, but now Fox is saying the same thing, and I'm just wondering if Steve Jobs has, you know, stretched out too far and got his neck chopped off, because a lot of these content providers are now saying, you know, we've come up with different distributions, and we're not, and I can understand where they're coming from. Even though Apple controls, like, all of the market for this stuff, they're not selling that much TV, so why wouldn't they try something else? But it still stresses me out.
You know, but it seems like the argument is that it's the constant variable pricing. The providers want to do variable pricing so that they can, you know, screw you for stuff you want.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you want to download Heroes? Okay, that'll be $4, please. Oh, you want to download Stupid Show Nobody Watches? You can have that for 99 cents.
Yeah.
And Jobs and Apple saying, no, we want it all to be one price, and perhaps even a new price of 99 instead of $1.99.
Yeah.
And the content provider saying, oh my God, no. So I don't know. I think having Apple be the only distribution method is bad. I think, you know, that's monopolistic, and I think it's consumers should have choice. But at the same time, I'd prefer the Apple solution.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I don't know. I feel like I don't know quite enough to really offer anything new, but, and especially since I don't, you know, I hardly download the video, unlike you. But I just, it's so frustrating to hear about that and say, you know what, you've got to go forward, you've got to make it work somehow. Because the more you've got content providers saying, oh, we're not going to use this distribution method, it ends up being a variation of the high-def DVD stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, you end up with people being confused and people saying, why can't I just see the show I want? Why can't I see the show I want how I want? You know, if I want to see CSI, I can get Comcast, I can get DirecTV, I can get Dish, no matter which venue I choose, I can watch CSI.
Yep.
And that's critically important. And as stuff is now going on to computer, you need to have that. You need to be able to say, no matter which computer system I go to, Amazon Unbox or iTunes or, you know, some random thing that hasn't happened yet, as long as I can get CSI, that's fine. And
yep.
I think that's what you need to be able to do in order to sell it to consumers.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I got. Is there anything you would like to comment on?
Not much.
I think if you have an iPhone review unit or would like to provide us with iPhones, I don't know. And, you know, just to go back to that, I don't know what the magic number is. If tomorrow they release a 32, you know, a 16 or a 32 gigabyte even model of iPhone, but it's $600, is that worth it for me? Do I need to wait for that price to drop?
32 is the, at least, I don't have any money, so I can't buy anything. But 32 gigs is totally fine for me, because I'm basing it on the size of my current iTunes library. And that allows me to put a bunch of TV shows on there and not have to really bounce around too much. And
yeah, I think you're right, because I just picked up, I've got an iPod Photo, which is a 30-gigabyte model. Yeah. So 32, and I can have all of my music, and I should have room to put some video on it and probably enough video that I would be happy. So 32 is probably...
What's an iPod Photo?
It's basically the one they had right before the iPod Video, quote-unquote.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The one that showed pictures and stuff just before.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a color screen, slightly fatter form factor. And basically, I got it because it was right after they announced, I think, whatever the next generation was, and then these went on clearance discount.
Yeah.
And so I ended up getting this for a pretty good price.
Yep.
I think 32 is probably the magic memory number, but then in terms of price, I don't know where suddenly the price is so attractive that I don't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
And that'll be challenging, because clearly when they finally release it, it's going to be expensive, and I don't know if I'm going to feel, you know, how long I'm willing to wait before that price point drops.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you guys rock. mustardayonnaise.com is how you contact us and tell us we're stupid or have a question or something you want us to address.
Or all three things.
Or say, hey, how about some consistency with the podcast?
I know.
Anyway, thanks for listening. I'm Matt.
And I'm Richard.
And we'll catch you next week. Bye.
Au revoir.